Pak Tito, welcome to Conversation With.
Thanks very much, indeed, Lynn. Good opportunity for me also, you know, to be interviewed. It's a privilege for me.
Sir, just a few days ago, Aman Abdurrahman, the so-called cleric, one of the key persons behind the Jakarta Starbucks bombing, he was sentenced to death. Is the sentencing to death of Aman Abdurrahman turning him into a martyr?
Yes, it can happen. It can happen. You know that after the sentence, after the court trial, what happens to him is rather than, you know, being scared, then we see that the gesture of him to be happy and seems like, you know, smiling a little bit, right? So meaning that sending a message, thanks already sending me and, you know, paving me the way to go to heaven, something like that. So it can be interpreted by his followers that the struggle is still going on rather than being stopped. But, well, this is the option, you know, launching a soft approach or hard approach. So this being part of the game of hard approach, law enforcement, you know, must be prevailed in order to fight the terrorists, including the one in Indonesia, such as the leader, Aman Abdurrahman.
When, sir, do you decide when to take the hard approach, and when do you decide that this case, perhaps we will take a softer approach?
Always, you know, in countering terrorism, theoretically, cannot be done only by a single measure, single approach, soft approach or hard approach. But if we already judge this specific guy cannot be approached by soft measures, then of course we are opting the hard measures. Aman Abdurrahman already engaged and already put, you know, already convicted at least 2 times before. And still, he's still very important person. He's in the top of JAD, Jamaah Ansarul Daulah organization. Then, and we fail, you know, to approach him, then, of course...
He didn't stop approach. Putting his videos online. He did not stop continuing
yes,
his preaching.
Yes, we are also examining whether this guy can be approached or not, based on our personal communication and discussion. We have specific teams already experienced with that, and they said, no, this guy, there's no other way, otherwise, you know, only hard approach to stop him.
One of the very key questions in the Surabaya attacks was, it seems that the police were already watching these families, but in fact they took the surveillance off them. So can you explain, sir, why did you do that?
Yeah, you know, in the case of Surabaya attacks, JAD, Jemaah Ansarul Daulah, Surabaya cell, the one responsible for that attack, already watched by our teams 4 months, you know, for 4 months in some period before. But it seems that they are nothing really suspicious to plan any attacks and so on. Why? Because, number one, they use the social media. The features sometimes cannot be, to be honestly, cannot be tapped by us.
So basically it was because you felt that, your intelligence officers felt that nothing seemed really to be happening with these families. They were people of interest, but somehow nothing really was...
We have got priority. Mm-hmm. You know, you have got networks, right? Say 10 networks in one area, 10 cells in one area. So you've got, you need to prioritize your operation. If you think that this cell is not a threat, then you move to another one.
You take the resources and put it to another
Yes, because you know, to detect and to monitor and watch one cell or one network, you need to put a lot of resources. say, to monitor, to be honestly, to monitor 1% unit, at least maybe 20 or 30, you know, officers, you know.
But in the case of, you know, the ordinary citizen, what is it that we can do? What can the ordinary citizen do to help in this situation?
Yes.
Because the families that we have talked to in Surabaya, who in fact lived right next door to these families who were involved in the terrorist acts and even had children who played with
programs.
Them. That's right. None of them even knew that these families were planning something so horrific, sir. So what can we as ordinary citizens do?
In my view, my personal view, what happened in Surabaya, one family, husband and wife, right, four children, two boys and two girls, right? They engaged and they committed suicide. So it is quite surprising for us as well, to be honestly. But in my view, they're not only perpetrators, but they're also the victims. Well, the victim of what? The victim of spreading of radical ideology. There are two ways need to be done. Number one is that to moderate, radical narrative. You know, whether inviting external clerics or intellectuals, academics, and so on, or internal, because they've got a culture of trust insiders. Internal already converted to us, then we can use them. And number two, ideology could only be defeated by another ideology. Cannot by killing or by arresting, detaining, and so on.
What is this other ideology that you want to
substitute
extremism?
Pancasila, yes.
Basic Indonesian ideology.
This is our native ideology, because this contains of the unity, humanitarianism, you know, belief in one God, so democracy, social justice, and so on.
Tolerance of diversity.
Tolerance and diversity as well.
How close, though, sir, are you to actually catching or finding out who is the mastermind of the Surabaya attacks?
Already. We have already captured.
You feel that you have got the person who were the core of this problem?
Since 2011 and 12, after the fall of Al-Jamaa Islamiyah 2009 and 10, then we saw already the rise of Tawhid wal Jihad, the nucleus of JAD today, right? So then we make a map. We detect and we create a mosaic. We pull, part of the mosaic of the networks of JAD. So now we have got already almost 80% the full picture of the mosaic of Jamaah Ansar Daulah. Then they've got, networks in some provinces, in some areas below them. They've got also quite systematic, according to Weberian structure already. Cell in, they've got a branch in East Java with cells in Surabaya and so on. So we monitor all of them. We already, foiled a lot of plots of attacks. Yeah, more than 200. 500.
Exactly. I was going to ask you, sir, what we very often don't see is we do not see how many attacks you foil that never make the headlines.
500 since 2012, 2018, we have already captured terrorists or alleged terrorists, connected to JAD, right? At least 500 of them. But again, for media, right? Good news is bad news. Bad news is good news. Once you have got attacked, media will come over there, will flock and expose to the public. But if we foil the attack, you're not really interested. You're not really interested in trying to, coverage, to cover, except those who really focus on monitoring the dynamics of terrorism in Indonesia. But for those, you know, trying just to get the exclusive news and so on, well, it's not really good news.
One fine question, though: where to put that barometer, where to put that point of where you want to have national security and yet have civil liberties. Do you think that Indonesia has hit that right point now?
It is good today. After we cannot put exactly. It's subject to dynamics and specific situation, because you know it is just a pendulum. So again, for us, you know, since the issuance of the new law number 5, 2018, right? So the cursor's moving to national security today. Yeah, why? You have got networks already in front of your eyes, but you cannot stop them, and you watch them, but they are also smart enough to avoid and evade our detection and so on. So we need some more power. And today we have got already such power. We are going to respond, and we're going to move very quickly, right? Before the execution of this legislation, we need evidence. Once they are, say, possessing weapons or other illegal items, then we can move. Or they already committed crimes, bomb attacks and so on, then we can move. We are opening the gate for us to get into. But today, we don't need. They are closing the door to us. We still get into as long as they already engage and being a member, or they are helping proscribe terrorist organizations.
So we are not going to see worse attacks than what happened in Surabaya?
It can happen, right? Because, you know, it is just like a cat and dog game, hide and seek game. So if you are successful, then we can stop them, we can prevent. But our power for preemptive strike and prevent is now much, much bigger than before, since the new issuance of the new legislation.
And you think that will solve things? Can the average Indonesian on the streets of Surabaya and the streets of Bandung and the streets here of Jakarta and out also in the provinces, can you reassure them and say that they can sleep better?
Yes.
Because that they won't wake up to terrible headlines.
Yes. We know the problem, right? We pinpoint already the problem, even though for the long term, the spread of radical ideology need another strategy, you know, to be addressed. This is a big work, because you have to invite NBNPT, National Counterterrorism Agency, would be there. We have to encourage them, you know, to not to hesitate to bring all resources, all stakeholders, you know, nationally, in order to stop and to contain radical ideology.
And you, sir, in the decades now that you have been fighting terrorism, is there ever a time when you think, I am tired, that this just keeps going on?
No, it is pumping my adrenaline. Yeah, because it is my obligation, of number one, as a chief of police. But after also retiring as a chief of police, then it is also my obligation, you know, to keep the country in unity. Why? Because if terrorists won the struggle or the war, then Indonesia can be broken down. Why? Because, you know, the character of Indonesia. That is true that Indonesia is a country with mostly majority. But not to forget, they are not majority. We are not majority, you know, in all provinces. Say you have got Bali, with the majority is Hindu. You have got also Papua. I used to be chief of police in Papua for 2 years. Understand the psychological state of these people over there. The majority is 60-65% Christians. Sulawesi, North Sulawesi, majority also Christians. Eastern Indonesia, Nusa Tenggara, also you've got majority Christians. The problem is that whether they are willing or not to accept that the political system or political arena in national level, being fed with the Islamist agenda, I don't think so. Then it can be a disaster for the existence of the unity of the country, the unity of the Republic of Indonesia.
So you're never going to stop fighting terrorism?
No, even I'm trying to create a specific community to mobilize. I strongly believe that those championing radical ideology is a small part of society, of citizens of Indonesia, population, and also small part, even Muslim majority. Muslim majority is Muslim moderate. Problem is that they are militant. Yes, they are militant, ready to die. They are quite organized. So we need to wake up and organize and mobilize, right? The majority who are against them also. In order to, well, not to fight, it's not allowed for them to fight because in this country, only law enforcement officer have got the monopoly of using a force. But what we need is that a movement, right? Islamist movement could only be challenged by another movement. So we need a balance of movement in order to neutralize this sort of threat. Final message from me is that I strongly believe that in the case of Indonesia, we can defeat this small group of terrorism, right? Maybe still have a problem, but we can address the problem, right? Then we strongly believe that the power of Indonesia, with the support of the majority who are against them, sympathy of the public to the government very strong and condemned, right? Antipathy to terrorism, it is very important capital for us. And another thing is that, no worries. Indonesian police is the second biggest police force in the world after China. We have got 440,000 officers, vis-a-vis maybe less than 2,000 of them, right? So we strongly believe we are on top of them. Don't worry. Thank you.
Pak Tito, thank you very much for being on Conversation With.